in the glittering shadow of Jamaica's world-famous beaches, a name once sent shivers down the spine of every Montagonian, Stone Crusher. They weren't just a gang. They were an armed militia, a cult of killers who made beheadings their calling card and ambushes their daily ritual. Their battleground, the same sun-drenched streets tourists walked. Their targets, anyone, cops, civilians, even their own. They didn't hide in the hills. They walked into police stations and opened fire. They seized control of communities like Norwood, Canterbury, and Salt Spring, declaring war on the Jamaican state. And for years, they were winning, with a military hierarchy, access to illegal guns, and terrifying discipline. The Stone Crusher gang operated more like a paramilitary force than a street crew. But how did they rise? Who armed them? Why did Jamaica's tourist paradise become a war zone? This is not just a story of brutality. It's a story about power, poverty, corruption, and the price a country pays when the line between don and soldier vanishes in a puff of gun smoke. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. Rise of the Crushers. In the early 2000s, Jamaica was already bleeding. Gun violence had been part of the landscape for decades, rooted in Cold War-era politics, garrison communities, and the drug trade. But what emerged in Montego Bay was something darker, something unprecedented. A gang that combined ritualistic brutality with military-grade tactics. Their name, Stone Crusher. Birth of a monster. The gang was born in the gritty inner-city enclaves of Norwood and Canterbury, two of the most violence-prone areas in St. James. These were not neighborhoods. They were survival zones. Unemployment was rampant. Trust in police was non-existent. And young men found purpose in the barrel of a gun. At first, Stone Crusher was just another crew in the gang ecosystem, running extortion rackets, robbing, and acting as muscle for dons higher up the criminal food chain. But then came the shift. They began organizing. They didn't want to take orders. They wanted to take territory, discipline. By death, Stone Crusher's reputation grew when stories of their initiation rites spread. Beheadings weren't just executions. They were performances, messages. A body found without a head meant the victim had betrayed them, or worse, the system. Informants were dragged from homes. Witnesses were burned alive. Even family members weren't off limits. They earned the nickname the Butchers, not for dramatics, but because of how they disposed of enemies. Inside the gang, discipline was enforced with terror. Members who broke rank were executed. Loyalty was measured in blood. They didn't just want obedience. They wanted fear, and fear was a currency they spent well. The gun pipeline, Jamaica, is an island, but guns washed up like driftwood. Most weapons came from the United States via illegal shipments, packed in barrels, stuffed in car parts, hidden among consumer goods. Stone Crusher tapped into that pipeline aggressively. They forged alliances with overseas connections, including Jamaican diaspora figures involved in the U.S. drug trade. The result? A steady flow of high-powered weapons into the hills above Montego Bay. AK-47s, M-16s, Glock pistols with extended clips. They weren't using machetes and revolvers anymore. They were outgunning the police, and they knew it. Extortion. And control Montego Bay wasn't just the tourism capital. It was a cash cow. And Stone Crusher milked it dry. Construction sites were taxed. Businesses paid protection money. Even taxi operators and small vendors were forced to pay tribute. Those who refused found their stalls burned or their children kidnapped. In neighborhoods like Granville and Salt Spring, police presence became rare. Why? Because the officers were afraid or compromised. Residents began calling the gang the real government. They fixed potholes, paid for funerals, hosted back-to-school treats. But it came with a price. Silence. You saw nothing. You said nothing, or you disappeared. The police pushed back. By 2006, Stone Crusher had become a national emergency. They were linked to over 100 murders. Police officers were among the dead. One particularly brutal ambush left two cops riddled with bullets in their patrol car, their weapons stolen and paraded like trophies. The Jamaican Constabulary Force, JCF, responded with fury. A special anti-gang task force was created and raids were launched deep into gang territory. Homes were bulldozed. Checkpoints dotted the roads into downtown Montego Bay. Helicopters circled the hills like vultures. But it wasn't enough. Stone Crusher members didn't run. They retaliated. In a shocking move, they stormed the Anchovy police station, brazenly opening fire on the building in the middle of the day. Officers ducked for cover. The message was clear. We are not afraid of you. That single act shattered any illusion that this was a typical street gang. They had declared war. Inside the mind of a Crusher One former member, interviewed years later under witness protection, described life inside Stone Crusher as total loyalty or total death. Every man had to know how to shoot, move, hide, and kill, he said. We trained in the bush, real training, like soldiers. They practiced formations, used hand signals, carried out coordinated raids. It wasn't chaos, it was controlled violence. They weren't just random gunmen, they were tacticians, and their targets weren't just enemies. Sometimes it was random people, used to send a message or settle a score. Women were tortured, children were used as shields. Their motto was simple, no mercy. Chapter 2, Fall of the Kingdom. By 2007, the writing was on the wall. The gang had grown too bold, too violent, and too visible. The government, now under immense public and international pressure, launched a sweeping counterinsurgency operation. It wasn't just a war on crime. It was a war to reclaim the state. And at the center of it was a name whispered in fear. Eldon Calvert, the face of the beast. Eldon Calvert was no ordinary gangster. Tall, charismatic, and ruthless, he was believed to be the mastermind behind Stone Crusher's rise. Police blamed him for dozens of killings. He was known to walk into public places in full daylight, daring authorities to act, but the system seemed unable to hold him. Time and again, he was arrested and released. Witnesses disappeared. Evidence evaporated. Judges recused themselves. The rumor on the street, he had allies in high places. And every time he walked free, the gang grew stronger. Until one night in 2006, when police finally decided enough was enough. The night of fire. In a coordinated dawn raid, officers descended on Norwood and Rose Heights with military support. Gunfire erupted for hours. Stone Crusher gunmen fired from rooftops. Grenades were tossed. Civilians screamed as bullets ripped through zinc and concrete. Police recovered high-powered rifles and bulletproof vests, some reportedly bearing the insignia of overseas law enforcement. By morning, the streets were wet with blood. Dozens were arrested. Several suspected gang members lay dead. But Calvert had slipped through the cracks again. The war was not over. The legal chessboard. In the years that followed, the government and Stone Crusher engaged in a deadly dance. One in courtrooms, not streets. Calvert was finally captured and charged with murder. The trial was Jamaica's most watched, but once again, things unraveled. Key witnesses recanted. Some were killed. Others vanished. In 2010, he was acquitted of murder, to the shock and horror of the public. The justice system, it seemed, had lost its grip. But behind the scenes, the gang was bleeding. Police operations had dismantled its leadership. Key lieutenants were killed in shootouts. Informants began flipping, and the international gun pipeline began drying up. Stone Crusher was still feared, but no longer invincible. The new generation. By the mid-2010s, Stone Crusher as an organized entity was disbanded, but its influence lived on, splintering into smaller, more chaotic factions. Gangs like G-City and One Order filled the vacuum. The violence shifted, mutated, spread. Montego Bay remained one of the most dangerous places per capita on Earth. But no single gang would ever dominate like the Crushers did. They became legend, myth, a cautionary tale, and in some corners, a badge of twisted honor. Graffiti still marks some walls in Norwood. Bullet holes still scar police stations. And mothers still light candles for sons who picked up guns because the world gave them no better option. Legacy in blood. The Stone Crusher Gang wasn't just a criminal group. It was a reflection of something deeper. A society that failed to protect its youth. A state that allowed guns to flow unchecked. And a justice system too weak to hold the powerful accountable. They ruled with fear, but they were born. From poverty, they died in shootouts, but they lived in silence. The silence of communities too broken to scream. And their memory, it lingers. In every child recruited today. In every mother burying a teenager. In every tourist snapping a photo. Unaware they're standing on a street that once ran red. Stone Crusher may be gone, but the system that birthed them, that still lives.